Hello, friends. This is Michael Bohm with Youth Apologetics Training. Today, we're going to start a whole new series. We're going to be talking with Dr. Jerry Bergman. We're going to be talking to him about vestigial organs. What are those? Why have they been used in the past to support evolution? And why there really is no vestigial organs? Really quick about Dr. Jerry Bergman. Dr. Bergman teaches biology, chemistry, and anatomy at Northwest State College in Archbold, Ohio, and is an adjunct associate professor at University of Toledo Medical College. He has 9 earned degrees, including a doctorate from Wayne State University in Detroit, Michigan, a member of Mensa, we've had a few of those already, listed in Who's Who in the Midwest and Who's Who in Theology and Science. He has over 950 publications in both scholarly and popular science journals and has written 35 books and monographs. Dr. Bergman's work has been translated into 12 languages, including French, German, Italian, Spanish, Danish, Polish, and Swedish. Among his many books is a monograph on the creation-evolution controversy published by Phi Delta Kappa, the Honor Society in Education, and a college textbook on evaluation, and has contributed chapters to numerous others. Other books include Slaughter of the Dissidents, The Dark Side of Darwinism, Hitler and the Darwinian Worldview, and the forthcoming Darwinism's Blunders, Frauds, and Forgeries. All these books are available on Amazon. We're going to ask Dr. Bergman about a few of them. Dr. Bergman, welcome to the Youth Apologetics Training Podcast.
Thank you very much.
So, friends, today we're going to talk about vestigial organs. Dr. Bergman, what are vestigial organs?
Well, vestigial organs used to be, evolution has taught, organs that have no function in us today that we inherited from our evolutionary ancestors, which in them had a function. And then they started to realize that a lot of these organs have a function. So now some redefine it as organs that have less function than our evolutionary ancestors. That's kind of misleading because we have smell that's not as good as dogs or other animals. So therefore, technically, according to that definition, smell, vision, our vision is not as good as a bird's, etc. Technically, just about all of our organs would be vestigial except possibly our brain as a result of that new definition. But it's been a really big problem historically because once they label an organ vestigial, the assumption has been it has no function, or at least that was the assumption for many years. And therefore, if it's a problem, just remove it. And as a result, a good example is, the best example is they remove the tonsils, the appendix. Now we know both the tonsils and the appendix have very important functions. And therefore, they're not removed unless there are clear indications that they should be removed.
Yeah, I had my tonsils removed when I was 5 years old. At the time, I was told that I was the youngest person in the United States to have their tonsils removed. I don't know if that was true or not, but I have had bouts with colds and allergies and throat problems ever since. Now, I really explain that to me. What exactly happens when you have your tonsils removed? What function does your tonsils perform?
Well, the tonsils are their first line of defense against pathogens. And when you remove them, the pathogens end up going down farther and causing more problems. And that's why they don't remove them unless they have to. Now, in some cases, they have to because they are so active in removing pathogens that they swell up and then it's hard to breathe. So therefore, in some cases, they have no choice. They have to remove them. But on the other hand, rarely is it removed today. In fact, I've done surveys of students, and I ask how many have their tonsils out. Maybe one or two out of a class of 25, 30 people have their tonsils out. So it is rarely done now, and for good reason, because we know as a whole, when you have your tonsils removed, as a whole, you have more problems.
Yeah, that's the truth.
As I guess your experience was.
Absolutely. And it has been an uphill battle. I usually will get about 3 colds every winter. And last summer, for the first time in my entire life, I got a cold in the middle of summer, which just blew me away. It was like, you know, the sun's beating down. There's vitamin D everywhere you look. And here I am getting a cold in the middle of summer. So, yeah. Okay, so I'm reading through your book. Vestigial organs are fully functional. Friends, you got to check this book out. It is a fantastic book. In fact, it's like the only book out there on this subject. So if you're interested in the subject of vestigial organs, this is the book. This is what you get. And as I was reading it, Dr. Bergman, I came upon some concepts that are a little bit new to me. Dysteleology? Is that, am I pronouncing that right?
Dysteleology. That's the idea that you can disprove there's a creator by poor design. And when they claim poor design, and I've looked at a number of these areas where they've claimed poor design, invariably I find out it's not poor design. Basically what they do is misinterpret or misunderstand the evidence. Like the one we talked about before, the tonsils. When I was about, I don't remember how old I was, but I was pretty young, I had them out and I asked the doctor why. And he said, well, they don't have any function, therefore you're better to get them out when you're young. It's easier, it's less problematic. So I had them out for no reason at all, and that was very common, and grew back. So I had to have them out again, have them removed a second time. And I remember that experience very well, and it was the first introduction to vestigial organs. So since that experience, I bled, you know, and there was, I vomited, and so it's, I remember pretty well what the event.
Pain.
And as a result of that word vestigial stuck in my mind, and I was cued into that ever since. And when I studied biology, I was cued into the claim that certain organs are vestigial. And I just made a list of them, and when they came up in my anatomy classes or my other biology classes, then I would keep notes and begin to collect information about vestigial organs. And it was this was no minor area in evolution. I have a book right in front of me called The Meaning of Evolution, and it actually the whole title is Through Science to God, and he's trying to teach theistic evolution by Floyd Darrell. It was published in the 20s. And on page 101, he said, man possesses nearly 200 such vestigial structures. And then he gives several examples, all of which are wrong, like the appendix and the tonsils, which he says here has no use in man. But, of course, later on they discovered they did have a use. And so, as I mentioned, then evolutionists begin to say vestigial is not useless but has less use, which, again, is a very poor definition. So it's a bad story. It really discouraged research because once they had the idea these organs were useless, why do research on them? So they're removing not only the tonsils, but they're removing many other organs, like the appendix is a good example. And now we realize that's a mistake. And now we try to do what we can to keep the appendix and only remove it when it absolutely has to be removed, such as when it becomes infected and it bursts.
And so basically what we have here is almost kind of like, you know, your new atheists and your, well, your other atheists who accuse Christians of committing the God of the gaps fallacy. You know, God did it, therefore we don't need to look into it. And here we have a situation where real science, you know, scientists have said, no, this is a vestigial organ. There's no need to look into it. It's actually hindered to an extent science moving forward. And it's actually damaged many lives, me included.
Yeah, it did, and me included, and my wife included, because when they did abdominal surgery in many states, for various reasons, like if you have a cesarean childbirth, then they, by law in many states, they had to remove the appendix for no reason, just because when they're in there, they might as well just take it out. Now, I don't know if any states still have that law. I would hope not, but on the other hand, a lot of people lost their appendix for no good reason at all. And again, this person here, Darrell, Floyd Darrell, claimed there are nearly 200 such structures. Well, the Encyclopedia Britannica, which we have at the college, it's maybe 5 years old, it says there are 100 vestigial organs. And in fact, my research shows there are none. All of them have a very clear use. And I spent a lot of time trying to find out what that use is, so it's not, you know, it's not hidden. It's in the literature. In fact, some of these, we knew what they did 50 years ago. But it's not widely explained in medical books, for example. Although the anatomy books that I've used at the college, and I've taught anatomy for about 20 years, none of them made any claims of any of the organs being vestigial. But then the students take biology, and our biology book says there are many vestigial organs in man. So students say, now wait a minute, we just took biology and it said there are, you know, 100 or so vestigial organs in man. Now you're teaching anatomy, now you're saying there are none. And I said, that's right. And they say, well, doesn't the biology books, don't they know? And I said, well, evidently not. There's a lot of mistakes in textbooks. That's a big problem.
I was raised to understand that there were vestigial organs and that there was basically junk parts in your body.
Yeah.
And going back to the whole dysteleology, bad design argument, that seems to be going on still today, just in different realms, even though more and more scientists are now recognizing, hey, the whole vestigial argument thing, that those organs actually do have a function. But now they're arguing that there's junk DNA.
Right.
Things like, for example, God screwed up the design of our eye because the octopus eye is more designed, better designed. And, there's so many others. I would imagine you probably have many different examples. But you hear that all the time, that God, you know, if there really was a God, he would have done it this way rather than what you see in nature.
Yeah, you do. And the eye example, the retina, is they claim it's backward. And no, it could not work if it was the other way. It has to be the way it is, which is away from the light. So light comes in, it's got to go through some of the nerves and so on to get to the retina. The retina is, as they say, upside down. But it has to be upside down because the retina cells need enormous levels of nutrients and oxygen to function. They're very active cells in the body. So therefore, they have to be near the source of blood supply. And being, quote, backward, they're right next to the what they call the retina pigment epithelium. And this is where the nutrients are supplied. So they are designed this way for good reason. And we know now also that so the structure of the eye is such where it's almost like a light tube, where you put light at one end and it'll go through this tube which circles around and come out the other end. Well, the same thing, the fiber optics, they call this, the system in our eyes is designed somewhat like fiber optics, so that the light ends up getting to the retina. And we now know, and you've probably seen the commercial, which so shows this, that the normal human with average eyesight can see a candle 10 miles away. And you can't get any better than that. And another example is that the human eye is so sensitive, it can respond to a single photon. You can't get more sensitive than that. In fact, the problem today is their eyesight is too sensitive, and as a result, you can see sunglasses. They're very, very popular. In fact, my eye doctor said you should wear sunglasses most of the time during the summer, especially if you have blue eyes like I do. If you have brown eyes, it's of less concern, but nonetheless, the major problem for most people is their eyes are too sensitive. So there's a good argument that maybe they should be less effective, so we wouldn't have such a problem with over amounts of light.
Interesting. Okay. Well, let's look at some of these vestigial organs. What about the tailbone, the coccyx?
Well, the tailbone has a very important function. It's a anchor for many muscles. There's a whole set of muscles down there that it anchors to. And so the tailbone, therefore, it's small and it hardly moves. There's slight movement, but it's small, but it does hook up with these muscles, which supports the whole pelvic floor. And so it serves a very important function. It's not a tail. It's not a tail. It doesn't have nerves like a tail. It doesn't have muscles that actually cause the tail to move, the tailbone to move. So it's not a tailbone. It is an os coccyx. Yeah, but we call it the common term is a tailbone, but that's not what it is.
Okay. And see, as I was going through junior high and high school, we were being taught that that it was actually the remnants of an actual tail.
Right.
And that there was no function to it other than it was just leftovers from our monkey days past.
That's the common claim. And if you think about it, a tail back there, a functional tail, would really be useful. It would be kind of like a third hand. You could hold on to things with it. Monkeys, many monkeys who have tails, find it very, very useful. And if we had it, I don't see what reason we would have to lose it because it would be very functional. Dogs,
right.
It's critical. A dog communicates primarily through the tail. That's how we know a dog is happy or a dog is sad. If the tail drops, he's sad. If it wags like crazy, he's happy. If it really wags like crazy, we know he's really happy. And so therefore, it's a very important means of communication.
Right. If he charges you with his tail down, you either run or you crouch and get ready to fight.
Yeah, that's true.
And cats use it for balance. And I tell you what, just today I installed a a magnetic lock on a door frame. The thing weighed about 20 pounds, and I sure could have used that tail.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I could have held that thing up and used both my hands. That would have helped quite a bit. Okay, I'm going to stop right there. Again, guys, that's Dr. Jerry Bergman. Today we're talking about his book, Vestigial Organs Are Fully Functional. Again, guys, this is the book. If you want to learn about vestigial organs, this is it. This is the book you get. So anyway, yeah, I'm going to stop right there. Friends, if you like these types of podcasts, if you're new to Youth Apologetics Training, I have like over 580 episodes at this point. So if you come out to my website, youthapologeticstraining.com, or you can catch it on Sermon Audio, but on youthapologeticstraining.com and answerreadyministries.com, if you click on the podcast archive, it's loaded to the gill slits with podcasts. They're all free. They're all for you guys. So go ahead and check them out. And with that, I love you guys, and I'll see you tomorrow.